Well, welcome everyone. This is the third of six classes in the Discovering Buddhism module, Thought Transformation, Training Your Mind. So let's begin with our prayers on page 34 in the prayer book. We'll start with refuge and generating bodhicitta. Three times in English, the four immeasurables, the seven limb prayer, and the short mandala offering. These help prepare our minds so that we get the most benefit from the discussion that's to follow. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merits of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniriya Tayami. Okay, and we'll begin with a meditation. So start with your posture. Back a little bit straighter than you normally sit, but not rigid. Head maybe just a degree or two in front of the vertical, but not tilted to one side or the other. Eyes lightly closed or just very slightly open. Lips gently closed. Tongue on the hard palate behind our upper teeth. Shoulders down, not clenched up, but down and a little bit back so that our chest opens up. Upper arms away from the sides of our chest. Right hand on left, with the thumbs slightly below, touching slightly below the level of the navel. If we're sitting in a chair, we're sitting towards the front of the chair, not leaning back, our feet flat on the floor or on a cushion underneath our feet. If we're sitting on a cushion, we're sitting towards the front of the cushion and our legs crossed in the position that we find comfortable and stable. So just take a moment, scan your body from the top of your head down to the soles of your feet and identify any tension or discomfort. and address it now so it doesn't become a recurring distraction during the meditation. And we take three deep breaths from the abdomen, the stomach expanding on the in-breath and contracting towards our spine on the out-breath. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And always, as always, we begin by setting our motivation. In particular, the bodhicitta motivation. The wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all. That is our motivation for doing this meditation and participating in the discussion that's to follow. That may not come naturally or easily, but even if you have to kind of force it out, it's said to be incredibly beneficial. I am doing this so I can become enlightened, so I can be of benefit to all sentient beings. And having set our motivation, we now begin the meditation, a simple concentration meditation, placing the mind, the awareness, on a chosen object, the object in this case being the movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils, the physical sensation of air moving in and out through the nostrils. Nothing more, nothing less than that. Just mind aware of breath. And every time we notice that our mind has wandered off to another object, we just set that aside without judgment. To say, okay, and come back to the breath over and over and over again. And we end our meditation with a brief dedication to put a seal on it. We acknowledge that we've done something a little bit out of the ordinary that has made a positive imprint on our mind stream. And we think, may that positive energy not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. And now while we're still in this kind of focused, concentrated state, I'd like to read the text that we're using, the 8 verses of thought transformation. So, do you remember where in the prayer book that was? 161, okay. You can turn to page 161 in the gold prayer book. We'll read this together. Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. Vigilant, the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear, as if I had found a precious treasure. When, out of envy, others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. When someone whom I have benefited and whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, I shall regard that person as my holy guru. In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers. I shall secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. Undefiled by the stains of the superstition of the 8 worldly concerns, may I, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, be released from the bondage of attachment. Okay. So tonight we are going to discuss verses 3 and 4. First, I wanted to see if there are any questions about material that we've covered in the past couple weeks. Does anybody have any questions or anything they want to bring up?
Of course, if you're joining us online, you can raise your hand if you're on Zoom. If you're on YouTube, just type your questions in the chat. If you're here, just raise your hand. Any questions?
Okay. I don't see any. Are there any online?
No.
Okay. We'll continue with verse 3. This is really the getting into the heart of the practice here, and this is really practical and something we can work with now. Vigilant, the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. And this, there's another translation that refers to, instead of delusion, refers to disturbing, translates as disturbing attitude. Delusion, we typically think of a thought that interferes with our ability to see reality, which is typically thoughts motivated by anger, attachment, and ignorance. And we'll talk about this a little bit more. A disturbing attitude, as used in the other translation, is a thought that upsets our mind, causes it to be agitated so that, again, we don't see reality. We don't see things as they are. So both terms are really implying that these are thoughts or ideas or emotions that come up that prevent us from seeing reality. And that's why they cause problems for ourselves and can cause problems for others. Any thought that's not based on seeing things as they are is going to be a source of problems. And the Buddha says if we're willing to look at our mind, we'll see there are a lot of delusions that come up. And that's part of the work that he says we have ahead of us to determine what's delusion and what's a real direct perception of reality. So the first thing he says is we have to be vigilant. And this is where our meditation practice comes in. Because typically when we're out living our lives or we're at work and we're getting phone calls and we're getting messages and people want to talk to us and we have to go to a meeting and we have to plan what's happening later in the day, we're thinking about what's already happened. We're thinking about what's going to happen, but we're not paying much attention to what's happening in our mind right now. So that's where actually developing some ability to concentrate, to pay attention to what's going on in our mind right now is a necessary skill that we have to develop. We can't transform our mind if we can't even see what's there right now. So the Buddha is saying the first thing you have to do is develop some ability to concentrate, which in the first meditation, you know, we use a fairly neutral object of our breath. You know, it's always there. We don't have strong feelings about it one way or the other, except when we're losing our breath or can't breathe. But as long as it's there, we're pretty neutral about our breath. But we take that same ability to concentrate and pay attention to our breath and take it off the cushion, take it into our work, take it into our interactions with our family, take it into our interactions with our friends and the people we dislike. And we use that same ability to concentrate on what's going on in our mind. That's a necessary skill if we want to become enlightened. We have to see what's there and see what would be better if we could change it. Okay, so we're vigilant. We identify these thoughts as soon as they arise. We don't let them fester. We don't let them lead us off into fantasies or make up stories about them or justify them or say, oh, this is great. We're vigilant and we notice them right away as they arise. So talk a little bit about what's going on in our mind. That's not really the subject of this course, but I want to talk about a little bit how the mind works from the Buddhist point of view. We have our mind or consciousness. I'll use consciousness here. And our mind encounters various objects, okay? There are objects of perception, which could be a red cushion, a bottle of water, a memory about I have to go to store on the way home tonight, a person, emotion, everything that our mind encounters, the various objects, thoughts, people, emotions, memories, all objects that our mind encounters. And every time our mind encounters an object, something as simple as a red cushion, automatically, right away, one of three things happen. We either experience pleasure, displeasure, or indifference. Buddha said, if we're willing to look at our mind, we're basically going through life saying, I like this, I don't like that, I don't care about that. I mean, it's really pretty childish. But everything we encounter, one of those three mental factors arises. I like it, I don't like it, I don't care about it. So I look at the red cushion, and immediately I'm perceiving the red cushion, one of those three feelings will arise, okay? Immediately on experiencing a beautiful sunset, one of those feelings may arise or will arise. Encountering an unpleasant smell, one of those feelings will arise. And encountering another person, one of these will arise. What determines which one of those arises in the mind? Why? When Chris, you're an advanced student. You don't get to answer. Okay. Why, when I look at a sunset, does pleasure arise in my mind? Why do I say I like that? Experience, what kind of experience? So what's the Buddhist word for that? Yes, bingo, karma. Okay. This is the way our mind is patterned by previous experiences in this lifetime and in previous lifetimes. It's automatic. You know, we don't have any choice in that. That is our karma. We are experiencing the results of our past actions. If we like the color red and we look at a red cushion, pleasure. That is the result of karma. Okay. I can't stand the smell of hard-boiled eggs. I think they stink to high heaven. That is a result of my karma, okay? I don't have a choice. When we're in the dentist and chair and he is drilling on a back molar, displeasure arises. That is karma, okay? We don't have a choice. Our karma forces us to do that. And that's okay. That's not a problem. We inevitably experience the results of our karma. Now, when a Buddha has purified all his karma, a Buddha, an enlightened being, is no longer under the control of karma. So these feelings do not automatically arise in the mind of the Buddha every time he or she encounters an object. The Buddha just sees things directly, just sees reality, okay? These are, at some level, a little bit of a distortion. Buddha sees things directly, and that's said to be pure bliss. Okay, the Buddha can be surrounded by stinking hard-boiled eggs, and he's just blissed out, okay? Every experience for the Buddha is bliss, but we're not there yet. We're experiencing the results of our karma. Okay, we don't have any control over this, okay? And we can't sit there in the dentist chair and say, oh, this is a pleasurable experience. You know, that's just fooling yourselves, okay? It is unpleasurable. But the next step said, this is where spiritual training for most of us happens, is this quickly turns into, is followed by the delusions, okay, which is anger, attachment, or ignorance. If it's a pleasurable experience, we become attached to it, which means we start to cling to it. We overestimate its value. Okay, yes, it's pleasurable, but we forget that it's not going to last, that it's not ultimately satisfying, that it's not going to make us happy. Okay, so we take pleasure and then we start to run with it and say, this person is the greatest person, and the more time I spend around this person, the happier I'm going to be, and we're going to stay together for the rest of our lives, and everything's going to be wonderful. And we know it's not going to work out, but that's where the attachment comes in. If it's displeasure, we push it away. We say, I don't want this, okay? That's a form of anger, okay? We make stories about this person is a source of my problems. They made me angry. They did this to me. They did that to me. I cannot be around them. I have to get away from them. Okay? And indifference, we go into ignorance. We say, this doesn't matter. This doesn't count. I have no relation to this person. I'm not interested in them. I don't care about their happiness. I don't care about their unhappiness. Okay, so these three, we don't have any control over this. This is our karma. But when we take those kind of almost neutral experiences of liking, disliking, don't care, nothing more than that, and start to project onto them and build stories around them, that's where we get into this stage, okay? And that's where we're losing touch with reality. So spiritual training, it said, for most of us is kind of learning to sever this almost automatic connection where we just take a pleasurable experience and run with it. We take an unpleasurable experience and build up a whole drama around it. It's all coming from our mind. That is all a projection from our mind that is not found in the object or the experience itself. Okay? So, the moment a delusion appears in my mind, that refers to these, okay? Doesn't refer to the first three. Those are just the results of karma, okay? Those are not delusions per se. But when we take them and then that story starts to arise, okay? When we say, oh, this person's making me angry. Why do they make me angry? How dare they make me angry? But you know, I actually kind of like being angry at this person. I'm going to stay angry at them, and I'm going to find all these good reasons to justify my being angry at them. That's what he means by being vigilant when we start to see that happening. Okay, attachment. I like this person. Okay, this person's going to make me happy. I want to spend the rest of my life with this person. If I don't spend the rest of my life with this person, I'm going to be miserable. Okay, that's the story that arises. Okay, that's the delusion that we're building onto that simple feeling of pleasure. We have to notice, the sooner we notice it, the better chance we have of seeing it for what it is. Okay, and then the same thing, ignorance. This person, I don't know them. I don't care about them. I have no connection to them. I'm not going to worry about them. They're just someone who's walking by, okay? Again, that's a story that's not based on reality. So these are all those delusions that arise. And these delusions, as he says, endanger myself. They cause me to create negative karma, to do actions of body, speech, and mind that will cause me problems in the future, okay? And then they cause me to act in ways that harm others also, okay? So this is not about suppressing our negative thoughts. It's not about ignoring them, but it's about becoming immediately aware of them. At first, you know, when we start to work with our mind in this way, you know, the horse is already out of the barn and we're just going to say, okay, I really got angry there. I really rode that for all it's worth. But as we work on this kind of practice, we can catch these things sooner. And just by identifying them, that takes a lot of their power away. It doesn't make them go away completely. It doesn't stop them from arising, but it does make them less powerful. And the sooner we identify them for what they are, the more options we have, okay? If we haven't ridden it all the way to the end line, but the sooner we're back sooner and we can stop and say, okay, I don't have to follow that. And then we are training our mind. I mean, these feelings of anger and attachment and ignorance, those are habits that we've practiced very well in the past. So it's like stopping smoking or something like that. It's a habit. It's hard at first. You have to really grit your teeth, and it seems very forced and unnatural. But with time, those old habits lose their power, and we can replace them with habits that are based on ultimately seeing reality as it is, that are not delusions. It's said that we actually replace them with what we frequently refer to as their antidote, okay? So if we notice that we have anger coming up a lot, it's said that if we meditate on patience and love, the wish that others be happy, that that meditation will replace the anger with time. If we have a problems with attachment, said we should meditate on impermanence, which is the nature of all phenomena, that they don't last, that everything falls apart, that this experience we think will give us happiness dissipates over time. Nothing is permanent. Nothing is unchanging. So we meditate on impermanence, and that's the antidote if we have a lot of problems with attachment. And instead, if we have a lot of ignorance, or sometimes also if we have a lot of doubt, if we question everything, if we don't accept, if our mind is just bored and jumping around from subject to subject and not really getting serious about anything, that's said to be a form of ignorance of doubt. Said we should just do simple concentration on the breath. Concentration, developing powers of concentration, is the antidote for ignorance. And we'll talk about some other stuff later. So we say we should confront it when one of these delusions appears, one of these disturbing attitudes, which just means acknowledging it, not sugarcoating it, not saying that, not convincing ourselves, my anger is righteous, I'm justified in feeling this way, but just acknowledge it and then practice the antidote as soon as possible. So this is really practical, down-to-earth Buddhism, I think. This is stuff we can work on right now. We can set aside everything else the Buddha taught and just start to look at what's coming up in our mind, identifying it, applying the antidote, developing new habits, new ways of thinking. Any questions or comments about that?
And again, anyone on YouTube, feel free to leave a question in the chat.
Okay, so let's do a little meditation. Just a moment of watching the breath, get our minds back to that concentrated, focused state. So let's think for a moment about the three delusions, our disturbing attitudes, anger, the wish to harm or push away, attachment, the mind that clings, that overestimates the good qualities of an object, and ignorance or doubt, the mind that is agitated, unfixed, always jumping from object to object, always suspicious, always challenging, never can stay focused. And certainly we all have experience of all three of these. But most people find that there's one that seems to be their strongest habitual way of thinking that comes up more often in interacting with the world around them. So see if you can identify which one you're most familiar with, which one is your strongest habit. And having identified one of these delusions as the one that's most present in our mind, we think about the appropriate antidote that the Buddha has pointed out to us. If anger seems to come up over and over again, the antidote to that is to meditate on patience and on love, the wish that all beings be happy. If attachment is a special issue for us, we meditate on impermanence and understanding that everything is in the process of changing and falling apart. Nothing is fixed and impermanent, unchanging. Everything is always changing from moment to moment. And if ignorance or doubt is a special issue for us, we do concentration meditation. Counteract that distracted mind with a mind that is focused and clear. And we think about how, as we go about our day, the sooner we can bring the antidote to use, the more effective it is in dissipating the strength of the delusion. may seem very artificial or forced at first, but with practice, we notice these positive attitudes begin to arise spontaneously in place of the delusions. We don't turn into nothingness or just blobs. We still have things we like, things we don't like, things we don't care about. But we're not carrying that on to the next level of applying all this extraneous and really invalid interpretation upon those very simple feelings. You can relax your concentration. Okay, any comments or questions? We move on to the next verse. Okay, so this is, whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature, it always makes me think of Venerable Rabina, that word wicked, she uses it a lot. The other translation has person of bad nature. That may be a little bit more acceptable. And overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I had found a precious treasure. And sometimes I think they're not all that rare. They seem pretty common at times. Okay. So whenever I meet a person of bad nature, I think that's probably a better translation. Wicked has a lot of connotation I don't think is really appropriate here. Person of bad nature, someone who's always grumpy, always angry, always selfish, always looking out for one. Okay. It's just a fact. We do meet people like that. Okay. Someone overwhelmed by violent negative actions, or sometimes that's said to be overwhelmed by negative energy. People who are just angry, attached, bitter. Okay, we can feel this coming off some people. People with intense suffering, those who are having physical or mental problems, who are sick, you know, have serious injuries. Okay, we may not like being around those people. Some people have no problem with it. Okay, but it's inevitable that we will encounter people like this in our lives. So rather than pushing them away, it said we should hold them dear. Okay, that's how do we wrap our minds around this? There are a couple ways to approach this. We can think that no matter how difficult or unpleasant someone may be, they, just like myself and like everyone, want to be happy. That's something that we all have in common. Okay, they may be going about it in ways that we don't think are particularly effective or going to work, but they want to be happy. They are suffering, just like every other sentient being. They want their suffering to end. They want to be happy. So in that way, we have much more in common with these people than things we don't have in common. Okay, so we're actually very close in that way. Okay, we can also think that we are meeting these people, because of our karma. It's not random. They're not aggressors. We're not victims. They're not coming in our lives ruining it. We are encountering people like that because of our own past actions in the past. If we hadn't acted in certain ways, we wouldn't be encountering people like that. I said this before, but I think we know some people who go through life and never meet an enemy because their mind is such that it doesn't have the karma to meet enemies. It doesn't perceive enemy when we look at a person who we think is just horrible and awful. Okay, they may see them as someone suffering who wants to be happy. they have the type mind that can see them that way. And that's much happier, a much happier state to be in than to see people to go through life and seeing a lot of enemies. That's not a very happy way to live your life. Okay. And then it is dependent upon these people who push our buttons that we develop positive qualities of our own. We don't develop patience and compassion and generosity and all those good qualities by dealing with people who are easy to get along with. Okay, we need the people who stretch our abilities. And that way, these people are our teachers. They're pointing out to us where we have room to grow, where we can develop more. Without these people, we would not become enlightened. We need these people to become enlightened. They're very valuable to us in that way. Okay, we also need teachers and others like that. But we also need difficult people in our lives to become enlightened. So in a way, we could say we are dependent upon them for our enlightenment. And it said that very highly realized beings, not necessarily Buddhas, but what we refer to as high-level bodhisattvas, which is someone who's realized bodhicitta, you know, actively seek out, want difficult people in their lives, you know, want unpleasant people and people who are dirty and people who are lying and people who are stealing, because that's the final, that'll help them polish the final rough edges off that they need to become a Buddha. But it's kind of ironic because they're high-level bodhisattvas, so they very rarely see anyone who acts that way. Their mind cannot see that. They're the people who don't have enemies, but they actively want enemies. For the rest of us, most of us have no problem finding enemies. Okay. But instead of reacting to them with repulsion, pushing away, get out of my life, stay away from me, we react to them as a precious treasure. Okay. And it said that the ultimate antidote for this sense of this, for learning how to deal with these people is an understanding of emptiness. And that's not the subject of this course. The antidote for difficult people, for unpleasant people, for enemies, the antidote is to meditate on emptiness, which is the ultimate nature of reality. Which means nothing exists the way we think it exists. Things are very much dependent upon karma and my consciousness. That enemy, there is no quality of enemy, of unpleasant person that I can find out there in any being separate from my own mind and my own karma. Okay, because otherwise everyone who ever came into contact with them, including their own mother, would see them as an enemy if they really existed that way. They exist that way because of my mind and my karma. That's what we're talking about when we talk about emptiness. So that's the ultimate antidote. If you're going through life and it just seems you're just meeting unpleasant people, one after another, first thing you have to do is look at your karma, okay, and start to clean up your karma by purifying it, which is another course. And then you have to meditate on emptiness, the nature of reality. Those are the antidotes for dealing with the difficult people in your life. The antidote is not pushing them away or not pointing out their flaws to them so that they'll change into what you think they should be. Okay, it's starting to see how they really exist and how your what is them and what's your mind's projection onto them. And that's how we get rid of the unpleasant people in our lives. And it's not magic. It's just working with your own mind. Okay. So let's do a brief meditation. Just a minute of breath. Now think about, bring to mind someone in your life who you think of as a difficult person or challenging. It doesn't have to be someone who's out to murder you in your sleep or anything like that, but just someone maybe at work who gets on your nerves. Just realize that, you know, okay, they're a difficult person. Well, a lot of that is my projection. I've decided they're a difficult person. I've labeled them a difficult person. I can't say for sure that every single person they know thinks they're difficult. So there's definitely an element of projection there. It's not too hard to see. And now we think that that person, as irritating as they may be, as many bad habits as they have, that person, just like myself, wants to be happy. Maybe I don't think they're going about it in the right way, but that is what they want. They want to be happy. And now think that this person is in my life. The ultimate reason that I am interacting with them is because of karma that I have created in the past. I am responsible for this situation. I am not a victim. I have created the causes and conditions for this person to be in my life. I may not be aware of having done it, but if we understand karma, we accept that. And then we think that this person, if I really take advantage of this situation, is helping me develop my positive qualities. Patience, kindness, compassion, generosity, love. This person is presenting me with incredible opportunities if I can take advantage of them. And ultimately, we can think that this person, just like myself, just like every phenomena, every object, is empty of inherent existence. Instead, they are a result of causes, conditions, karmic forces, and my consciousness that labels them, which is not to say they don't exist, but they don't exist in that fixed, permanent, unchanging way that I think they do. Okay, and you can relax your concentration. So that's the two verses for tonight. Next week we go on to, I'd hope to do verse 5. Let's see, we have 3 more classes. Yeah, so you know, this is, we're on schedule. So next week we'll do 5 and 6. The week after that we'll be entirely on verse 7, which is really Tonglen, which is an important topic. And then the Week after that, we'll do verse 8, which is the 8 worldly concerns and kind of wrap up. So meditate 6 days this week. Read the 8 verses before you begin your meditation. It's nice to do it out loud. Anybody memorized it yet? I know some people are working on it. Okay. Got 3 more weeks to get it memorized. It's quite short. And then do some breathing meditation. And then 4 days out of the week, meditate on verse 3. 3 days out of the week, meditate on verse 4. That's a nice, 4 on 3, 3 on 4. And continue with the readings. And we'll be back here next week. Any questions? Anything else, Linda? Okay. Yes. Thank you for reminding me. I think we wrapped it up enough there. Okay. Yeah. So we will be back here next week. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you guys next week.